Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Expansive Leadership, Cultivating Mindfulness to Lead Self and Others in a Changing World, a 28-day program, by Lata Punnamalai, Ph.D. Foreword by Dr. Ram Mahalingam, narrated by Elizabeth Wiley. Publisher's Note. In this audio edition, you will hear references to figures and tables present in the print and ebook formats of the book. Foreword. Leaders existed long before the emergence of leadership theories. History is full of inspiring leaders who inspire us to transform our lives and communities. To emulate such leaders, we need to understand what makes them great leaders. One of the most endearing aspects of great leaders is their ability to connect to people from various walks of life. Their encounters with their followers, full of stories of how personable they are. Simultaneously, they invoke a sense of awe and connection that put everyone at ease. They are diligent and mindful of situated and complex stories of ourselves. Mindful awareness is an essential ingredient of successful leaders. Mindful leadership is a growing area of research. Although the clinical and practitioner-oriented approach to mindful leadership is in vogue, Dr. Punnamalai's book provides a comprehensive, theory-driven, yet practitioner-friendly approach to mindful leadership. It emphasizes interconnectedness, interdependence, and a commitment to social change. It addresses a significant gap in the growing body of research on mindful leadership. What are the challenges to becoming a mindful leader? According to eminent Tibetan Buddhist master Dilgo Khyentse, diligence is vital for an awakened mind. Dilgo Khyentse defines diligence as the joyous effort and active determination to carry out positive actions without any expectations or self-satisfaction. Punnamalai argues that to be diligent, we must cultivate an expansive sense of self to overcome our self-centered and egocentric desires to pursue leadership for self-aggrandizement. Becoming an expansive leader is a journey that starts with the stilling of the mind. According to Tibetan master teacher Karak Gomchung, in the mind of a beginner, there is clarity, but no stability. To stop it being consigned to the wind of thoughts, fasten it with the rope of mindfulness. Anyone who tries to do a mindful meditation will empathize with Karak Gomchung's warning. We all need to master the art of fastening our wandering mind with the rope of mindfulness. Grounded on her research on the expansive self, Dr. Punnamalai has developed an excellent hands-on program on mindful leadership. To cultivate an expansive leadership, we have to cultivate mindfulness. Dr. Punnamalai's 4-week program will guide us through the process of fastening our mind with the rope of mindfulness. Dr. Punnamalai researches mindfulness and has years of experience teaching mindful leadership to various audiences. As an action researcher, there is a seamless connection between her research, practice, and teaching. The chasm between the knower and the process of knowing is a critical challenge for any teacher, considering the heterogeneity in student learning styles. Dr. Punnamalai has handled this challenge admirably, with a lot of compassion. Using her rich pedagogical experience, she has skillfully woven the personal narratives of transformations, which are insightful and a delight to hear. These narratives are windows to myriad ways of learning and understanding mindfulness practices. These experiential learning narratives also provide a rich tapestry of embodying expansive leadership. This book offers a unique, enriching account of what expansive leadership is and how to cultivate it. As a dedicated teacher, Dr. Poonamallee provides a rich array of practices that will benefit students with varying mastery of mindfulness. The book offers a robust roadmap to cultivating expansive, mindful leadership. Expansive leadership embodies diligence with a commitment to making positive leadership changes for an inclusive, diverse, and equitable world. Ram Mahalingam, Ph.D., Barger Leadership Institute Professor, Department of Psychology, Director, Barger Leadership Institute, Director, Mindful Dignity Lab, Senior Fellow, Michigan Society of Fellows, University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, Michigan, 48109-1043. Part 1. The Ground. Chapter 1. Preparing the Ground. Preparing. Close your eyes for a moment and let yourself take a deep breath, deeper than you normally allow for. Imagine for a few moments that we are all interconnected parts of the same web of life, not just you and me as individuals and humans, but the universe at large. What kind of world would that be? What kind of organizations, communities, and societies would we create? What kind of relationships would we embed ourselves in and invest our time in? How would we make decisions? What kind of leadership would we need to foster and support that world? How do we nurture and develop that kind of leadership? The present moment demands that we invent new ways of being, doing, and relating with the world. New ways to protect ourselves and the world from our own worst impulses, to ensure that we don't exacerbate the fragility of the world we live in. To meet this moment, we need fresh, collective, inclusive, and interdependent models of leadership and new approaches to leadership development. Not just doing the same thing better, but doing better things with our lives, resources, talents, and opportunities. Grounded in my work on integrative mental models and identities, I present the expansive leadership model as a 21st century alternative to the egocentric and tribal-centric leadership models of yesteryears, and provide a blueprint for how to use mindfulness and contemplative approaches for developing socially mindful, just, collective, and inclusive leadership. In recent years, mindfulness practice has been enthusiastically adopted by different organizations, sectors, and communities, from educators to therapists and even business executives. The field of leadership development has seen its share of adoption of mindfulness as well. Mindfulness and contemplative practice are effective tools for such an undertaking because, at the very minimum, these approaches foster self-awareness and emotional self-regulation that are foundational for effective leadership. An unknown author wrote, "Between stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space is our power to choose our response. In our response lies our growth and freedom." Meditation and mindfulness practice nurture our ability to inhabit that space with power and agency. The ability to lead begins with the process of self-discovery, self-awareness, self-leadership, and discovering our connections to other people and the universe at large. Central to this framework is the practical mindfulness training, which incorporates intentionality, authenticity, pro-social orientation, transformation, service. Through mindfulness training, we learn how to cultivate attention and awareness that allows us to live all aspects of our lives with a great sense of skill, connection, openness, and balance. Paying attention to the activity of the mind for even a few minutes yields powerful and potentially valuable information. Our capacity to listen deeply, to make informed decisions, to effectively handle stress, to ignite innovation, and to access previously untapped resources and apply them rely on our capacity to be mindful and present. When we are fully present in the moment, we optimize our capacity for self-awareness, self-regulation, and relationship management. The primary tenet is respond, not react. Mindfulness is more commonly used for leadership development in instrumental ways such as stress and anxiety reduction, improving resilience, increasing attention and concentration, mostly all towards being more productive in workplace contexts. This approach bypasses the original intent that underlies mindfulness practice and shortchanges the practitioner. The original intent of all mindfulness and contemplative practice is to develop insight, compassion, critical inquiry towards an ethical life, dharma. Especially in the Buddhist tradition that permeates the mindfulness utilization in contemporary Western world. By focusing primarily, if not solely, on the immediate priorities of individual pain reduction and people's effectiveness in the capitalistic and material worlds, and by overlooking the moral and spiritual questions, most contemporary approaches to mindfulness-based leadership development bypass the spiritual intent and truncate an individual's capacity for holistic development. Wellwood refers to Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche's term spiritual materialism, or the tendency to commodify spirituality itself in service of our own ego clinging. No matter what the practice or teaching, ego loves to wait in ambush, to appropriate spirituality for its own survival and gain. Further, the contemporary focus also obfuscates the persistent structural inequities where the individual experience is not explored in the context of social identities. Without context and an examination of how people challenge, engage, or are silently complicit in the perpetuation of existing inequalities and the destruction of the natural environment. Removed from its moral and communal contexts and lacking in ethical frameworks and expectations, contemporary mindfulness practices, especially in corporate or corporate-like settings, is the nexus of cultural appropriation, commodification, and white supremacy. Like Gandhi's Satyagraha, which in its core is an active fight for truth, is often mischaracterized as passive political resistance. The so-called mindfulness revolution has moved the practice from its original purpose of liberation and enlightenment to quelling resistance and serving profits. This phenomenon of McMindfulness or McDonaldization of mindfulness movement is exemplified by the Time magazine featuring blonde white women on covers of two issues exalting the mindfulness revolution. The fact that the two issues were separated by a decade demonstrates how entrenched this approach has become. The most well-known mindful leadership teachers are all uniformly white, corporate, and promote mindfulness as a way for people to cope with their busy, stressful world and contribute to the bottom line, rather than fortifying and supporting practitioners in challenging fundamental assumptions about the world in which we live. No doubt, a leader needs a calm space to recharge, but to focus solely on that as an outcome of this mindfulness revolution is narcissistic, self-referential, and irresponsible. This book proposes a multifaceted mindfulness approach that takes a whole-person approach, including the emotional, cognitive, embodied, experiential, moral, and spiritual realms, with an explicit goal of facilitating a more interconnected sense of self and expansive mindsets. In addition, this process leverages critical reflection around social identities and mental models that define how we engage with others and the world to look at ourselves anew. It takes bravery and resilience to face up to and sit with negative emotions, such as shame and guilt, that are bound to occur during such a critical examination. Mindfulness practice can help make sense of and process those negative emotions with resilience. Growing up in a traditional South Indian Brahmin family, stories of sages who had the power to will themselves into samadhi, meditative trance consciousness, through dhyana, meditation, and even connect to the future and past of the universe in that state, were stock bedtime stories of my childhood. Throughout my teens and early 20s, I struggled to reconcile what was, even then, a deep fascination with contemplative practice and my progressive, feminist, anti-caste, anti-bigotry stance. To me, it all seemed part of the same package, and I wanted nothing to do with it. I was in my mid-20s when I started to meditate in earnestness, and then continued to deepen my practice over the next 2 decades, when I also obtained a doctorate in organizational behavior and was teaching leadership development in universities and consulting with a few organizations. Pieces started to click together. My personal meditation practice and professional calling of supporting people development merged. Later, when I started to teach by myself as a newly minted faculty member, I first taught the class as I was taught to teach. I have been experimenting and playing with the curriculum over the years to make it my own and address some of my concerns around the development part. For example, I taught an entire semester once using popular Hollywood movies. This experimentation continued until my own aha moment, using mindfulness and contemplative approaches as a pedagogy for leadership development. Even though I owed much of my personal growth in emotional self-awareness and self-regulation to my mindfulness practice that started over 20 years ago, it didn't dawn on me that I could and should utilize it to teach leadership development until around 10 years ago. The response to my experimentation with just one module of 3 weeks was so encouraging that I retooled the entire curriculum around mindfulness. Having taught it many times to different audiences, now I feel confident that I have distilled the essence, refined the process, and clarified and connected the underlying pedagogical principles that I wanted to share it with others who would like to apply it in their own self-development or in their leadership development practice. I wished to create a mindfulness-based leadership development program particularly focused on cultivating mental models that are morally expansive and interdependence-centric, and less egocentric and narrow-minded or plagued by isms. My goal was to develop a transformative, whole-person approach that considers leadership as a layered, complex phenomenon blending individual and structural transformation processes. This was partly in response to the competency approach to leadership development that focuses on behaviors and not at the underlying mental models and mindsets. I designed and implemented with the knowledge that mental models can be changed, and we can all cultivate more interdependent identities and pro-social mental models while acknowledging that we co-hold occasionally conflicting mental models and deal with complex and nuanced choices. Mindfulness practice is an appropriate choice to further this end because it also increases the capacity for cognitive complexity. The program was developed over a 10-year period with different audience groups ranging from undergraduate students in engineering, technology, and business to graduate students in design, architecture, management, leadership, and practitioners, including managers, consultants, and social and environmental activists. I provide a glimpse into their experience through quotes drawn from their journals to bring to life the concepts and practices. Like the bodhisattva who delay their own salvation out of compassion for others, a good leader transcends their personal egocentrism. Sometimes we forget that iconic and altruistic leaders such as Mahatma Gandhi, Dr. Martin Luther King, and President Nelson Mandela were also flesh and blood humans like the rest of us. Meditation practice grounds us in the shared human condition, capacity for greatness, altruism, and pro-social mindfulness simultaneously coexisting with egocentrism, fear, anxiety, and the impulses to dehumanize the other. The practice allows us to own our greatness while being brave enough to face our ignorant and ignoble impulses. It allows us to make a deliberate choice through slow thinking that helps us overcome our unconscious and implicit biases. The moment of pause is essential to slow our thinking so we can transcend the rote script by which we are all trained in our formative years and rewarded in adult years. I invite you to join this journey and explore how to be a leader in an expansive, inclusive, robust, and resilient way, using mindfulness practice in an iterative and cyclical way, from individual to structural and back in an integrative manner. You will have an opportunity to define and refine your identity, uncover your personal mental modes, and conclude with developing your own leadership philosophy. The book has been designed to introduce you to a new model of leadership while facilitating experiential explorations of the concepts through mindfulness practice. I have provided key references as endnotes to further your exploration into the academic research on which this model stands. The book is divided into four parts. Parts 1, 2, and 3 provide the basics of this model, filled with experiential exercises, including application in the real world, and how to infuse mindfulness in your everyday life. Part 4 is a structured journey through the model. I recommend following the 28-day plan that has been designed to give you an opportunity to systematically follow the guidelines and prompts and traverse through the personal to the communal to the structural using a combination of meditation practices, activities, and journal prompts. However, you should feel free to dip in or dig deep as you desire. Foundation to this work is practice. No amount of reading will make up for experience. It is like reading love stories to find love. Yes, reading love stories, poetry, and watching rom-com movies may make you more open to being loved, but it doesn't mean you will find love or fall in love if you don't also put yourself out there, willing to risk heartbreak and try. It helps to approach mindfulness practice with an understanding that this is one of the hardest things most of us may have undertaken. Despite my decades of practice, every time it is brand new. But that is why mindfulness can help us cultivate a beginner's mindset. However, there is no need to exoticize or mystify it. Being mindful and cultivating mindfulness is accessible to all of us. That is the paradox. There is no there. If you want to use this framework to facilitate leadership development for others, you need to have experienced at least some of the things the participants in your program will undergo. To understand the initial challenges and resistance, you need to practice too. Feel how long 5 minutes can feel like when one needs to sit. I strongly encourage that you complete the program yourself first, before offering it to others. But the book is laid out in detail for easy adoption and implementation. If you take the latter option, make a commitment to your personal practice while you are facilitating others' growth using the methodology. Share your experiences in the conversations you facilitate to normalize resistance. Chapter 2. Letting Go, Not Leaning In. Begin with the breath. For the uninitiated, meditation can be a daunting proposition. People come to the practice with several misconceptions. They think it is an emptying of the mind and worry that they won't be able to stop thinking or feeling or whatever it is that they think they should be able to control. We think we should strive to resist our thoughts, but the cruel joke is that what we resist tends to persist. One participant in my program writes about their concerns. I was always drawn away from anything that involved meditation. My mind is constantly spinning with different thoughts, concerns, anxieties, and ideas in my head that I never believed it would be feasible for me. An ancient Tibetan parable refers to this predicament as the monkey that wouldn't go away. When one is tasked not to think of a monkey to achieve nirvana, all one can think of is monkeys. Monkeys in the house, monkeys in the forests, monkeys stealing stuff, monkeys jumping into water, monkeys playing with each other, and so on and so forth. All your thoughts are about trying to banish the monkeys from your thoughts. Here is a peek into my wandering mind at moments like these. I'm trying not to think of monkeys, but instead, that's all I do. My inner dialogue goes like this. What would you do if that monkey comes into your house? If you shoo it, will it go away? Can you toss a banana out to the porch and lure him away? If you close all the doors to keep the monkeys away, then your air is stale and your house is too warm for comfort. If Hanuman is monkey god, aren't you chasing God away by shooing a monkey away? Will the monkey bring more of his friends to eat all your bananas that are ripening in your garden? Can I hose the monkey away? Does a monkey respond to water? Seriously, is a monkey scared of water? Do monkeys carry fleas? Do they bite? Are they dangerous? Maybe I should Google to find out more about monkeys. Are they deliberately diabolical or just naturally mischievous? Can they give me rabies? What happens if I get bitten by a monkey? What happens if I get bitten by a monkey on a weekend and my local clinic is not open and I need to go to the hospital? So many monkey thoughts intrude when you are told that your objective is to banish all thoughts regarding monkeys. People with a high achievement orientation particularly tend to struggle with how to sit back in calmness and let something come to them. Those of us like this need and relish the sense of control that comes from being able to make things happen. I speak from personal experience. What makes us effective in the profane world becomes a burden in the contemplative world.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?